3, the conversation with Whitney Young, April 29, proceed. Now, where were we? This is tape 3. I've already said that, though, haven't I?
I want to get back to it. Like it
yes, Mr. Gutwilling.
Whit and I have talked about before, and that is the fact that the white American, and by extension Whitney, I think, would also include the white liberal, is allowing himself to be diverted from the real confrontation, diverted by the Malcolm X's and the Adam Clayton Powells, and by the techniques or tactics of the revolution, the Stalins, the incident at the Triborough Bridge, people chaining themselves to cranes. The white liberal, for the first time, is being confronted, and speaking as a member of that much abused minority, the white liberal, it seems to me that Whitney is right. We are shrinking back with nervousness and fright at the fact of the confrontation.
It's almost as if desperately seeking excuses not to participate or some kind of rationale to withdraw. When you consider that only a handful of Negroes are actually participating in some of these extreme activities, this kind of blind mass indictment of a whole race of people is so illogical. And to further use that as an excuse, say, not to pass the Civil Rights Bill, is so illogical, because if the same standards were adopted for white people, it would mean that because white people bombed little children in churches, and because Oswald was white and Ruby was white, then white people shouldn't have their civil rights, the rest of them.
This doesn't mean that one should necessarily endorse a particular tactic or a particular act or policy, though.
No, this is a question of emphasis.
Exactly.
And focus. And at the present time, there is much more concern and expression about the acts engaged in by a few Negroes, where the best judgment isn't used, than there is about the more tragic present plight of Negro citizens that produces sometimes this kind of desperate attempt. And the other thing is that they fail to say that oftentimes this is not activities of Negroes and whites. The Triborough Bridge is an example of where 3 educated white people and 3 illiterate, unemployed Negroes were engaged, and yet the whole civil rights movement and all Negroes got blamed and mourned. But I have some reservations about why our friends like Senator Keating and Senator Humphrey and Senator Javits, the President and all, feel compelled to say to Negroes, you're going to be hurt, it's not helping your cause, to warn us, to caution us about restraint. Negroes have shown more restraint than any group of people. Instead of pointing out that we must get rid of the conditions, and I would like to have seen, after the Stalins, editorials that would have been commending Negroes for their good judgment and for following their leadership, and not editorials that were taunting Negroes for an activity that fizzled.
That was bad tactics.
Yeah, they said it fizzled, and they got frightened out, and it was poor organization, and that the police department was so well organized, and they never once commended Negroes for the great restraint, and pointed out again to the general society that this type of restraint is so commendable in the face of the great suffering. You see, what's been happening here is that all the Negro community can see, and they say this to us, is you propose a Marshall Plan to get better schools and better hospitals and better jobs and all this for Negro citizens. And the white community said, no, you can't do that. And that's preferential treatment. And then the NAACP proposed shortly after that a program of mass registration and selective voting to reward your friends and punish your enemies. And the paper said, no, you can't do that. That's unhealthy. That's block voting. And so the Stalin comes along. They say, no, that's unhealthy. That'll lead to violence. Well, all we are hearing from the responsible white community is what we shouldn't do and what they are against. But the problem still remains, and people want to know whether they fought. And so Negro leadership at this time, it isn't enough to deplore these other things like Stalin's. It isn't enough to applaud Negro leaders for having a dignified march on Washington. Negro leaders, responsible Negro leaders, must be given some victories, because we stand out in the midst of unemployed people and hold up nothing. You know, we're like people in a war without ammunition. We have nothing to hold up to say, because you followed this path and this course of action and showed good judgment, you now have in Harlem new schools and better teachers and principals and new housing. We don't have anything. And I don't know how long the white responsible community figures that it can continue to not give any victories to Negro leaders to hold up to and expect them to continue to be leaders and to influence their people.
That's clear, I should think. Let me change the subject back to something else for a moment. Let's cut back into history for a moment. You remember Myrdal's theory of what would have been a good reconstruction of the South after the Civil War. The first two elements being a compensation to slave owners for emancipated slaves paid by the federal government. Second, expropriation of land from planters, but payment for the land. Third, distribution of land to the freedmen, but not as gift, as a long-term financial arrangement, plus a lot of other things, too. How do you react to those three things? Do you have an emotional reaction to them?
I think they were very sound. I think that there was a planned procedure there that made sense, that would have tended to make the white Southerner feel that he wasn't giving up all and getting nothing in return. I think it was realistic as far as giving the Negro a chance to catch up. I think the tragedy was in the Tilden Compromise in that situation, where they withdrew the troops from the South.
Well, that's 10 years later.
That's right, but that was the thing that really, really broke it down. I think they were still on their way until that Tilden Compromise.
You mean in general the society was?
Yes, that's right.
There were certainly better relations than there was after.
Well, you know, the average story you get in reading the history books is that the Negroes who were serving in positions of increasing power, even in the United States Senate and in the Congress and all this, were illiterate, vicious people who had been put in there by the carpetbaggers to embarrass and to be vindictive toward the South. It was a way of ridiculing and all that. And this just isn't true. Many of these people were very skillful people, very able people. And as you know, during that period, there was no thought of the separate schools and separate restaurants.
No, that came very late.
This came much later.
Came very late. You don't have any... What I'm getting at is this now. I gather you have no emotional resistance to those proposals.
No.
This is not always true, of course. As some people, white people or Negroes, will say, no, that's condoning a moral wrong. You see, well, that's an insult to me, a Negro may say, to have the slaveholder compensated for an emancipation. Mm-hmm. This evokes some deep-seated emotional reaction sometimes.
But slavery had not been, by the society at that point, adjudged morally wrong. It's like saying now that smoking, is morally wrong, now that we now know that it's harmful and will lead to an early death. It may be now, but it was not during the period.
It's not legally wrong, anyway.
That's right. That's right.
Morally may be something quite different. Let me ask you just for a quick hip-shot view of several characters from American history. What do you think of Jefferson?
I'm really not familiar enough with the writing.
What I'm getting at about there is here's the person... who is a slaveholder, you see, and mm-hmm. offer the Declaration of Independence. This creates some complication of feeling sometimes.
Yeah.
What about Lincoln?
Well, I have mixed feelings about Lincoln. I've read both sides of Lincoln, one that he was basically disinterested in freeing of the slaves and was driven into this because it was necessary in order to save the Union, but if he could have saved the Union without freeing the slaves, that he would have done, and he is purported to have said something similar to this.
He said it.
That's what I understand. On the other hand, I'm inclined to feel that by reading this man more in depth, that he basically wanted to free the slaves, basically had real decent impulses, and if he made such a statement, it was what he felt to be the political and tactical thing to do. But it's difficult for me to believe that a man who could do and say some other things that he did not have some basic repulsion to the concept of slavery. And so I'm willing to still accord to this man the honors and the credit for being the emancipator.
He will say things like this too, of course. "I will say," says Lincoln, "that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races," and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he says it after the Emancipation Proclamation.
Yeah, well, I think
things like that. I mean, what does this signify in terms of feelings, your feelings in regard to historical process?
Yeah, well, I recognize the limited contacts and that any white people had with Negroes of that period. And probably they were victimized by the kind of anthropology and other things they were reading, which at that point would suggest basic inferiority. And this was the framework from which they were speaking. I think it's unfair, as it is today, for Negroes to judge a Booker T. Washington in today's context, as against
sure.
yesterday's situation.
Sure.
I think you'd have to judge Lincoln in the context of his climate and his contacts and his know-how. And in that context, I still would give him this kind of credit.
That is, you are saying that we can't deal with moral problems as absolutes. We have to deal with it in terms of historical context.
That's right. Let me tell you a little story.
Please.
I once heard a group of Negroes were trying to get a mayor of a certain southern city to employ Negro nurses. And he, after a great deal of effort, he finally said, "Well, now look, I can get those nurses in there if you will promise me you don't care how I do it." And they said, "All right." He said, "Now don't get angry with me or anything when you hear how I do it." And they said, "No, we just want Negro nursing there." Then he said publicly, he went to the hospital people and he went to the legislature, and he said, "I think it's a doggone dirty shame that our fine white girls from their nice homes and nice backgrounds have to rub and scrub and wash the private parts of these black Negroes."
And, the story.
Yeah, and they agreed with this and immediately passed a law saying that there must be Negro nurses. This is what I'm talking about. I think a part of this might well have been in Lincoln's. At least I'm willing to give him the benefit of that.
Yes. Well, you've clearly answered my question. What about Robert E. Lee?
I'm not that much of a student of the Civil War or something. You know, that past is really something I don't deal with too much. I should, I suppose, more.
These are very hot emotional issues, of course, to some people.
Well, they apparently are for those who find security only in the past, like the white who uses a Confederate hat and the Confederate flag and all. It's like the adult who wants to revert back to his mother's womb. This was the only period of security he knew in his life when he felt adequate. I think one reverts oftentimes to the past and the past symbols when they feel incapable of meeting the challenges of the present. I think it's good to know something about the past, including Plato and everything else, when it can be useful in dealing with the present, but not as a refuge and escape.
Let me read you a quotation from Myrdal's collaborator.
Alan Rose?
Rose. This must be Rose, yes. The whole tendency of the Negro history movement, not its history, but its propaganda, has been to encourage the average Negro to escape the realities, the actual achievements, and the actual failures of the present. Although the movement consciously tends to build race pride, it may also cause Negroes unconsciously to recognize that group pride is built partly on delusion and therefore may result in a devaluation of themselves for being forced to resort to such self-deception. That's long.
But I tried to point out that I thought that this group pride and solidarity was understandable.
Yes, good.
At this moment, and is positive as a counterbalance to the inferior feelings that the environment had caused Negroes to suspect that they had, given to the as a result of the treatment and all the symbols and signs that suggested their inferiority. And I thought that this growing pride was to be expected as they observed a number of things happening that happened even before Montgomery and Tuskegee, the emergence of African nations and all this. But I do think it's temporary. I would hope that it's temporary, because unless this new group pride and solidarity does not, which prompts this current aggressive thrust for equality, if it does not achieve this, and this pride is not used by the society to accomplish a true equality, then I think it can degenerate into a kind of chauvinism and nationalism, and to a devaluation of the group's ability. But I think this is left largely in the hands of the responsible white society, how it will utilize this newly found pride, and not get frightened by it, but see it as a positive thing to build on in terms of education of Negroes and everything else.
Whitney has a phrase, excuse me, Ron,
please,
where he says that this country is a problem-oriented society, that the white community sees everything in terms of problems rather than solutions. And this is what he's touching on.
Yeah, again, seeing integration by too many white people is seen either as something to be abhorred and fought, resisted completely, because it will bring in its wake all kinds of problems. Either it's seen as something that's to be delayed until, say, the day after I die, or else it's something to be grudgingly tolerated, as if one takes castor oil. It's inevitable. I know I got to take it, and it's probably good for me, but I don't want it. And I think this is consistent with the American inability to think deeply and to look for easy solutions. And we react to crisis. We don't benefit from past experiences. We wait for accidents to happen at a corner before we put up a green light, or for the bridge to fall down before we repair it. We don't act, we react. And again, we are a people that sees everything as a problem. Not as an idea to be explored, but as a problem to be dealt with and grudgingly to be met at a real personal sacrifice. And this is why I think we've got to begin to think of integration, not as a problem, but as an opportunity for a country to prove the validity of its system, of its economic system, of its Judeo-Christian convictions, of its democratic way of life. The Negro is a barometer of the validity of all of these now, and it's the first real test that this country has had, because in the final analysis, as Franklin Roosevelt said, the test of a country and all these systems I've mentioned is not to what extent it can give more to those who have, but to what extent it can give to those who have not. And unless this country is able to meet this challenge, then serious question can be raised about all these institutions and its validity. Because too many Americans think of, when asked what does being an American mean, we'll talk about refrigerators and cars, and we'll not talk about basic freedoms and opportunities. And this, I think, is going to is a real test of all that we hold very dear. If it doesn't work for the Negro in this country, then it's not likely to be the most appealing and attractive article for 75% of the world's population that's non-white, that's shopping around for some ways of life to adopt.
Yeah. That's clear, I think. You know, I don't want to keep you long. There are other things I'd like to ask you, but it is five, it's right at 5 o'clock, and I don't want to...
I hope you have what the basic...
Well, this is fine.
Good.
This is the end of the conversation with Whitney Young, April 29th, and